I feel like I walk into a room wearing my sweater vest and people are immediately thinking, that's a man who's going to crack down on the border.
Your nipples don't stick out through your sweater.
I don't worry about that as much as others, but it's a reasonable point.
Coming up, the politics of fashion, plus some baby advice for rapper Jay-Z, from one new dad to another.
You don't have to tip the nurses.
Culture critic Liesl Schillinger explains why America has fallen in love with Downton Abbey.
You're just a movie for us. We're happy to have you guys all parading around in red jackets, you know, riding to hounds and stuff for our entertainment.
And some breaking news from the world of mathematics.
The most boring museum you could ever come up with.
I think I can go one further.
You're listening to Chatter from America with Henry Timms from the 92nd Y.
In the face of adversity, we are stoic and we are resolute.
Matthew Bishop from The Economist.
Have we started?
And me, Femi OK, from WNYC Radio.
I think somebody dropped you on your head this morning.
So I had a challenging time over Christmas for a number of reasons, and one of them was sartorial.
You couldn't get in your Santa suit this year.
Well, that was a different issue. That was a different issue. That was a challenge. But the larger challenge was I have, for a long time, been a big fan of what the French, I think, call a gilet, and what I knew when I was in Europe as a sleeveless vest. It's a very handsome-looking kind of a thing, and particularly in New York, and as one gets a bit older, it's nice to keep the torso warm whilst having a bit of flexibility with the arms.
So that your nipples don't stick out through your sweater.
I don't worry about that as much as others, but it's a reasonable point. So for a long time, I expect probably the last 6 months, I've been, you know, dropping pretty heavy hints about what I really want for Christmas is a new sleeveless vest. That's really just the thing to see me off into the new year. And lo and behold, Santa was good to me this year. Under the tree was one of these said sleeveless vests, which I just felt great about. And I started wearing it last week for the first time.
You mean
time.
A vest like under your shirt or something?
No, I mean like what's the phrase for it here? It's like a waistcoat. It's like a waistcoat without a...
A sweater vest.
That's what it's called.
It's the technical term.
Okay, it's called a sweater vest.
So it's like a jumper without any arms.
Without any sleeves, yeah.
Okay. You see, it's actually an easier concept than it seems to have been explained. It is just a jumper without arms, or for our American listeners, a sweater without arms.
And you're not wearing it now, so...
No, well, there's a reason.
Does it not fit, or...?
Well, this is the issue. This is what's happened. I wore it into the office, and everyone started looking at me, you know, in a very unpleasant kind of a way. And, of course, what I've realised is in the time between me hoping to get this sweater vest and it being unleashed upon the public, it's had some very heavy political connotations, because Rick Santorum has become famous now for wearing the sweater vest, so much so there is even a Twitter campaign on behalf of his sweater vest, and his campaign now is building their whole strategy around how America will get to know Rick Santorum through wearing his sweater vest. So what was an innocuous act of fashion has turned into quite a dangerous political statement.
Because you feel he's a bit left-wing, Rick Santorum. You don't want to be associated with that kind of...
I feel like I walk into a room wearing my sweater vest and people are immediately thinking, that's a man who's going to crack down on the border.
Did you see the video on YouTube? They've actually created a song now about Rick Santorum and his sweater vest.
Well, this is the problem. I've had to put the sweater vest back in the drawer because it's too loaded now. It's just too significant. I'm going to leave it for a couple of years unless he gets to be president, in which case I'm going to have years without a sweater vest.
What colour is your sweater vest, by the way?
It was exciting grey.
Okay.
And that's his colour as
Rick Santorum has, in the last 5 days, he's worn a grey,
yeah,
a blue,
yeah,
a red, yeah, a beige, and a sort of olive sweater vest.
As I say, you know, if it ain't broke.
And he almost won the primary, didn't he? That's the thing. Maybe the sweater vest was the key.
I don't think it hurt.
Well, he did say he did a particularly good speech wearing a sweater vest, and then he continued to wear them afterwards.
I was at a speech 2 weeks ago, and I just happened to wear a sweater vest that day. There's about 1,200 people there. All the other candidates are dressed in suits and ties, and I just walked out and had a sweater vest on. It was more casual. And the internet lights up with, you know, what's this with the sweater vest? Because that speech actually went over very, very well. And if there was one event that I would have to say that really began the moment, it was that speech. So all of a sudden, the sweater vest was like, fear the vest.
And when he was asked, why are you wearing sweater vests? As people kind of poking fun at him, he said, it makes me look a little older, and I want to look older, so I've got a bit more gravitas.
That's exactly why I wear one.
Well, how much older do you want to look, Henry? I think you're doing quite well without one.
It's really the gravitas I'm searching for.
The gravitas
for,
rather than, yeah, the age.
That's the great
next
hope.
Step, the shroud.
I'm at a diner in Independence, yeah, Iowa. The guy says, you old enough to be president? Now, I had my jacket on. I didn't have my sweater vest. And he says,
you look lucky.
I said, well, how old do you think? He said, 32. And I said, no, I'm 53. No way, you're 53.
Awful how lucky
you are. So I'm thinking the sweater vest makes me look...
a little older.
A little older.
But isn't the point that, in a way, America doesn't have sleeves on its sweater? Isn't that the implicit point he's making?
You're so full of it, Henry.
Do you want this to be an election issue, the right for you to wear a sweater vest without being branded as a sort of extreme conservative right-winger?
You know Brilliant Bill, who engineers this programme?
Yeah.
He said the right to bear arms.
Oh.
That's the sort of goal.
Only an American could come up with that.
And that's perfect for a right-winger as well, isn't it?
I'm not saying a Bill's a right-winger.
No. Rick Santorum.
But can I just say, Femi?
Yes, please.
That my earlier point, which you were slightly snotty about, was that his sleeveless vest was a metaphor.
Oh, yes.
And as it turns out...
I was, a little.
As it turns out, yeah. Bill has proved me right.
The right to bear arms.
Brilliant.
I hear rumours this week you have boycotted Starbucks.
It's the first day of my boycott because Starbucks have put up the price of their coffee in some states only. So if
Is it now $1 million a cup?
Well, it's gone up 10 cents, actually 11 cents, my particular brand of coffee. In some states where people are not idiotic enough to pay dollars and dollars for their coffee, it's stayed the same price for a Starbucks. In other states where they know people will pay any amount for the coffee, it's gone up. In New York, coffee has gone up 10 cents at least in Starbucks. So I decided that over $4 was far too much for me to pay every single day. And I could add up all that $4 and buy textbooks for a little person on the African continent, somewhere in South America, maybe somewhere in Asia, and actually put them through school for a year with all the soy lattes I've been drinking. So I boycotted Starbucks. And yesterday I said goodbye to everybody, so I can't go back.
So just talk. And you've just laid a massive guilt trip on me as I'm sitting here drinking my Americano.
And it's a grande.
It is a grande. That's got to cost Matthew, at least $100.
That's but
don't
two or
don't
three
think of it
people.
As a grande. Think of it as a future. Think of it as a textbook you're drinking. Now, Femi, the good bit about this story, I think, is that this wasn't just a sort of I'm not going to go to Starbucks. And
I made an announcement.
That's the point, isn't it? This was actually quite a vocal boycott.
And they tried to persuade me. They're like, but then they know my name at Starbucks because I pop in every day. They said, but Femi, why don't you buy a Starbucks card? Because then you can get your soy for free. Okay, so great. If I buy a card today, I can get free soy milk today. They said, no, 4 visits. So 4 visits, that's textbooks for a school for probably a week.
Have you bought these textbooks for the school?
I haven't. I am just going to make sure I can last the end of the week, and then I'm going to start depositing the money in a little savings account for little people in Africa and Asia and South America. And I'm going to call it the Soy Latte Textbook Account.
I think you've occupied Starbucks, and I'm impressed. And
I think Occupy Starbucks.
Occupy Starbucks has begun. Mm. I also think you're a globe-trotting sort of issue championing, you know, cutting-edge journalist kind of a person. And it seems to me this is just really marks an interesting gravitation into middle age, which is you've reached the stage from going from the front lines of reporting in Africa. You're standing up in Starbucks and saying, no more.
And next week I will be wearing a sweater vest.
Oh, no. One thing you could do, Femi.
Yes.
Is you could go and work for Google instead, because I've just been to their offices in New York this morning. They've got this huge truck depot that they converted into this sort of funky workspace. There's all free food everywhere.
I've heard so much about their food.
And then there's little nap pods that you can go and sit in and have a nap. And they've got a library which has, instead of books, it has a screen with books on, and you can touch the book, the digital book, and right. It'll download onto your phone. So it's kind of like the library of the future, what we might all have in our homes.
Wow.
Anyway, so there's a lot of excitement about it. I was talking to their head of communications, and she was saying that they're doing a lot of work turning New York from being all about finance into being a centre for science, and that just been announced that Cornell University is going to open a technology campus in partnership with an Israeli technology center on Roosevelt Island. And a philanthropist has donated $350 million, one of the largest ever gifts to education. And they're going to create this tech hub. So New York is going to rival Silicon Valley. So the other scoop she told me about was that some Google people are donating money to a museum of math, which strikes me as about the most boring museum you could ever come up with.
I think I can go one further.
Can you?
Museum of the Sweater Vest.
See, I would go to that museum.
But math, I mean, what's
math,
it going
to
have?
That would be hard. That would be hard for me to go to.
I think lots of people the Silicon Valley people, and maths to them is like the music. There's beauty, there are patterns, and they, you know, it speaks to people in ways it may not speak to people in this room.
There's a bit of a phenom going on right now. It's all about a British period drama called Downton Abbey. It's on PBS. It's set just after the Titanic sank. It's set in on an estate called Downton Abbey in North Yorkshire. And it's the story of the aristocratic Crawley family and their servants.
Downton is a great house, Mr. Bates, and the Crawleys are a great family. We live by certain standards, and those standards can at first seem daunting.
Of course.
If you find yourself tongue-tied in the presence of his lordship, I can only assure you that his manners and grace will soon help you to perform your duties to the best of your ability.
And it's not only huge in the UK, it's massive in the United States as well. On the line, we have Liesl Schillinger, book and culture critic, writes for the New York Times. Hello there, Liesl.
Hello there, Femi.
So what are these vital ingredients that makes this very, very British show a hit?
We really do adore it. I mean, my friends and I want to have a Downton Abbey watching party when it starts this Sunday. You know, we love costume dramas. We love British dramas. We all went mad over Pride and Prejudice a long time ago when that came out. But this one is particularly exciting. It's got that upstairs, downstairs element that has been a hit here since our parents were young. It also has a nice American connection because, you know, the Titanic affected us too, and we think of that as being our tragedy as well as England's. And we like it that the lady who has provided the loot so that the head of Downton Abbey can keep hold of it is an American.
Do you think the Americans basically feel that 1776 was a big mistake and that they really wish they'd stuck with the British aristocracy and the Queen and all that kind of thing?
Oh, not at all. For us, it's just like, you're just a movie for us. We're happy to have you guys all parading around in red jackets, you know, riding to hounds and stuff for our entertainment. Our eyes can glisten when we see a royal wedding and all of that. But I think for us, it's theater. There's an augustness that's kind of fun. And in sort of jarring times, the continuity, even if it's almost 100 years old, of the British nobility is reassuring to watch.
Do you think that Downton Abbey would be doing so well were the economy buoyant and everyone happy?
I think there's a lot of escapism going on right now. I do think that when times are tough, it is nice to see dramas that happened a long time ago and to realize that everyone kind of got over it.
Liesl, if you jump on the PBS website for Masterclass Classic, it's got a countdown clock until Series 2 starts. So it's got the days, the minutes, the hours until you can see Season 2. There's a Twitter party gathering that's going to happen for that very first night that Season 2 comes back on. What is it that is making this TV series such an event?
It's a glorious story that you can just dive into and disappear into. And also, January is a bleak, cold time, so it's something to look forward to. We really watch it for the romance and for the history and for Maggie Smith, who's one of my heroines.
Well, on behalf of all the British people, we're just delighted to have helped distract you during tough times with our red coats and our basset hounds.
Oh, I just wish you could bring me some scones and clotted cream to make it even better.
Liesl Schillinger is a book and culture critic. She writes for numerous publications around the world, and particularly for the New York Times. Liesl, enjoy the next season of Downton Abbey. Thank you for joining us.
I shall. Thank you so much, Femi. Bye.
One of the most interesting stories of the year so far is, who would have predicted that Rupert Murdoch, after such a battering last year, after a man who, you know, represented the old in everything, was brought to his knees and he was criticised by so many and he seemed so distant and so foreign and so opaque, after all of those things, he would start the year by thinking, I'm just going to get onto Twitter one day and start saying what I think.
He's got into trouble already because very early on he's lying on the beach in the Caribbean somewhere. And the thought occurs to him, and he tweets it. Oh, the Brits, they have too many holidays.
That is...
And so he's tweeting that from the beach.
Well, I mean, and I think he's not making an unreasonable point. Having lived in both countries, it does seem quite, you know, heavy on holidays. I just rather like the idea of all of the communication staff at News International must have had the year of all years last year. I mean, it'd been very tough, and they're finally thinking, perhaps this will die down. And then, lo and behold, when they get their well-deserved holiday break, the boss has decided to let his voice be known.
You know, I did call them this week to ask if he would come on the show.
How did that go, Femi?
Not well.
He said, at no. Well, although I have a theory beyond... His tweets are actually very strangely worded. It seems to me one interpretation of this is they're actually experiments in haiku. If you read Rupert Murdoch's texts back, they seem like experiments in haiku, which sounds like an ambitious theory, but I want to just test out a couple on you. NY cold and empty, even Central Park, nice.
Yep, that's haiku.
Think, three richest Americans, three greatest philanthropists, Bloomberg, Gates, and Buffett.
See, I retweeted that one and said, why doesn't he give away some of his money as well, Rupert Murdoch? Does he not want to be a great American?
Oh, doubtless he tweeted straight back with an answer.
No, there's been a strange
radio
Twitter silence.
Radio silence. So that's my ambitious theory for the year, that this is that Rupert Murdoch is extending his many talents into experimental haiku.
He also tweeted his support for Rick Santorum. Big
man with
that.
No sleeves.
Are you ready?
Should be in the White House.
And you see how this
soon.
This all ties back together again. Here is his Santorum haiku. Well, well, values do count. Santorum result amazing. Policy very similar to Reagan. Now start to sound like him.
Maybe there should be some limericks. Can we think of any Santorum limericks? There was a man in a sweater vest who the voters decided was almost the best.
He bent down to...
No, don't go.
I have to finish the limerick. Mm-hmm. Actually, you can finish the limerick at Chatter America. Tweet it to us.
Which reminds me, we have at Chatter America is open for business. Rupert Murdoch has not joined, but our very first follower, I think, has shown the way for the sort of quality of follower we're looking for at Chatter America. She's an NYU professor and senior fellow at Demos, which I thought, as followers go, is a pretty high standard of person to kick off with.
At Chatter America, tweet us. Henry, there's this famous African-American music producer. He's worth millions. He's married to Beyoncé. And for some reason, you think there's a link between him and you?
Beyoncé is rumoured to be giving birth at St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital. And St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital was the hospital where my wife had our baby just before Christmas. So I really started to think to myself, what advice would I give a new father, like Jay-Z, who's going to be giving, you know, he's going to be doing just what I did, probably with more security. The first... is you don't have to tip the nurses. One of the key...
Did you try?
Well, no, I worked this out early on because I was a bit worried about it, because one of the things about coming to America is you realise there is virtually no scenario where it isn't appropriate to tip people. You can be in no interaction with anyone where if you don't slip someone something, it won't improve your situation. When you're entering into a situation where you're thinking about your firstborn child, this is a time when you're going to be very happy to share the wealth. So I went into it thinking I'd better bring some money for the nurses. And I said to the chief midwife a month before the delivery, how much should I bring? And she looked at me aghast and said, this is completely inappropriate. You really don't need to do this at all. But behind her was another nurse. And the nurse looked at me and I could see this twinkle in her eye, which was to think it won't do you any harm. But I didn't, in the end, I didn't tip the nurses. And I think, Jay-Z, that my first bit of advice for Jay-Z is don't feel you have to do that because it might get you off on the wrong foot. But I suspect some concert tickets would be a good idea.
Okay, second piece of advice.
Second piece of advice, Jay-Z, rap is no good. Rap of any kind is no good. Babies don't like rap music. They like classical music.
Maybe he'll invent a new genre of rap lullaby.
You're a child of destiny. You're the child of my destiny. You're my child with the child from Destiny Child. That's a hell of a recipe.
You know, Jay-Z is an Economist reader. Do you know how I know that?
But how do you know?
Because your press department made it up,
would be my guess. We ran an article a few years ago, an interview with the very French man who made Cristal champagne. And our interviewer said to him, Cristal, very upmarket champagne, do you mind the fact that all these rappers... drink it? Doesn't it kind of lower the brand, lower the tone? And this very French writer said, yes, but we can't do anything about it.
Is that what he said?
He said, yeah, we can't stop them drinking it. We'd obviously like to. And Jay-Z read this and launched a Femi-style boycott of Cristal champagne and launched his own champagne brand on the back of it. And it did terrible damage for the standing of Cristal amongst the rap community.
Quite right, too.
So he won't be cracking
open... What a snobby
open.
Thing to say.
To celebrate the birth of his child, he will not be cracking open Cristal.
Matthew, what have people been listening to?
You've been listening to Chatter from America with me, Matthew Bishop.
Femi O'Kay.
And Henry Timms.
Chatter from America is produced by Femi OK at WNYC Radio in New York. The opinions you've been listening to belong strictly to the chatterers and not to the organisations they work for. Thanks for listening.
My problem is going to not be mimicking your accents. I can't help it.
I think you mimic away.
Hello there, Liesl.
Hello there, Femi.